Hello and welcome back to episode 13 of the Boxing Social podcast in association with Betfred. I'm your host, Rob Tebbett, and delighted to be joined for the first time in a while by Boxing Social original co-host, the White Rhino, Dave Allen. You've abducted Barry Jones because he took your job, but you're back. You're bigger and better than ever. It's certainly quite big. How you doing, Dave?
Yeah, I'm good. I've eaten Barry Jones, as you can see. So I've eaten him and then come back. Yeah, it's... Nice to be back after a great weekend of boxing.
Yes, it certainly was a great weekend of boxing. We're going to get straight down to it because we only have you for a fleeting moment because you're a very busy man now with your various training and managing things. Just like to remind everybody beforehand that we did produce a negative COVID test before starting today and therefore are COVID secure in the Boxing Social podcast booth. Dave Allen has kindly offered to speak directly into his microphone throughout the whole session. So we're going to get going. This past weekend, let's start from the top and work our way down. Josh Kelly versus David Avanesyan. The fight went how you predicted beforehand, a stoppage win for David Avanesyan. What did you make of the fight?
Well, I love Josh Kelly as a bloke, right? Lovely fella. And I think he's a good fighter. He's a very good British level operator, in my opinion. And just got beat by a man with world-class strength, physical strength. You know, David Avanesyan is just too strong for him. Too experienced. We can make all the excuses we want for Josh. He should be a light middle. He needs more fights, more experience. He's just not strong enough at that level, at the top level. And that's the brutal, honest facts of it. He's not strong enough, done it hard enough. And that's that, Rob. Can't say any further than that. Might sound negative, but the truth, that's just the truth. That's just the cold, hard facts of it. You know, like some fighters can't punch, some aren't strong enough, some aren't this and that. Josh, just, at the top level. And David Avanesyan is not the highest level, but he's world class. He has world-class attributes, which is physical strength. Punch a bit. He's not the biggest puncher in the world, but he's very heavy-handed. And when you step up to that level, which I did a few times, I got found out as well, as many other fighters. There's no shame in not being world-class. And that's where Josh has landed, around British level, in my opinion.
Now, a lot of talk after the fight, or kind of the immediate aftermath of the fight, was around Josh Kelly's game plan, the fact that he elected, or certainly looked like he was stood there trading with Avanesyan from the early rounds. Was that, do you think, a game plan from Adam Booth and Josh Kelly, or do you think that was the fight that David Avanesyan made him fight?
Well, I think a bit of both. I think Josh, being so big at the weight, he ain't going to do 12 rounds of Avanesyan in a million years, so maybe trying to get Avanesyan out there early. Avanesyan's strength draws you, physical strength really draws you in and drains you, you know. You can't get away from physical. When I bought Tony Oka, I was thinking certain things when I was in the ring with him. He was so strong. And I was just kind of gravitating to him. He was so strong. And when he was draining my energy. He wouldn't even touch me or hit me. It was draining me. And Avanesyan was doing the same thing. So, like I said, there's a million and one excuses. The wrong style, the wrong weight. The top and bottom of it is Avanesyan's just too strong for him and too good. You know, when I seen Tony Jeffries today, they've rushed him. He went to the Olympics 5 years ago. He was an Olympian 5 years ago. We were over 100 amateur fights. ABA champion, Commonwealth Games, all the rest of it. It ain't too early for him. He's just not good enough. And they're the facts. You know, and people might say, oh, well, who used to say that? Well, I would say I weren't good enough at the top level. I weren't good enough at a level below the top level. But that is what it is. You know, simple as that.
I think a lot of people, like, it's become vogue, really, to kind of look at matchmaking and talk about matchmaking after fights. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. And it's something that Eddie Hearn has said in the past, that, you know, matchmaking is all very well and good, but there will come a point where a fighter will have to have an acid test, a litmus test, and come past it. Now, we spoke briefly off camera, and, you know, we'll say again that was one of the most enjoyable matchroom, forget matchroom shows, but certainly British boxing shows that I've seen in a long, long time. And it's because it was matched well. Now, the fact that David Avanesyan ultimately beat Josh Kelly, Robbie Davis came up short against Valenzuela, not ideal for those guys, but it made for a really, really good show. What next for Josh Kelly?
I think he's got options. One of them, he's such a good kid. He's such an handsome fella. He's got the world at his feet. He can do anything. He could literally never box again if he chose not to. You know, he's boohoo man, he's all the rest of it. Great for him, lovely kid. He doesn't have to box again, I don't think so. Or he can come back at like middleweight and try again. I don't think he's ever going to be a world champion, you know. And people always go, oh, well, if he's not going to be a world champion, what's the point in carrying on? If that's his thought process, fair enough. But if you want to be a British champion or a European champion, then I think that's a possibility. But that's just the top and bottom of it, isn't it? Me speaking as a boxing man, that knows and understands my boxing, he's never going to be a world-class operator because he hasn't got the physical strength. The ability, yes. Natural ability, yes. Athletic ability, yes. Physical strength and punch power, just a no, I'm afraid.
Is that physical strength from punch power something that he could potentially gain going up in weight?
Possibly.
Because he's big. I mean, he was 156 pounds on his debut. So he was technically a middleweight.
He was pushing Avanesyan back. So physically, in terms of having a wrestle, he might have got the better of Avanesyan if they'd wrestled for 30 seconds. So yeah, maybe he will be stronger and punch harder, but he's going to go up and face bigger, naturally bigger men though again. So while he's a bit more comfortable at the higher weight, he's going to be facing even bigger men again. And Avanesyan's not the biggest welterweight in the world.
No.
You know, he's not an Errol Spence. He's not an absolute giant of a man. And as physically strong as he is, he's not as strong as the Errol Spences of the world. So I think Josh can come back and win a British title at light middleweight. Being some great fighters, exciting. He's got a great style. I love to watch him. But will he ever be world champion? I don't think he'll ever be world champion. No.
Let's talk about the stoppage. Now, you admittedly knew Adam Booth for a very short period of time. But good stoppage from Adam Booth.
Yeah, I love Adam Booth. He's so clever. He's such a clever man. And we talk about the matchmaking again. I remember when the first fight meant to happen, I couldn't believe Josh Kelly was going to fight Avanesyan in December 2018. I remember at the time thinking, this is crazy. Avanesyan's going to walk straight for him. And I saw the same thought process. I don't care how much Josh Kelly's thickened up, grown as a man and thickened out. He's never going to beat Avanesyan in a million years. But Adam Booth is such a clever bloke. And I know him and Josh are close, and he made the right choice. He pulled him out. He's compassionate, and he said in front of another day if that's what he wants. And if he doesn't want to box again, he's saved him anyway from a good hiding. It was the right call and a great call. Big fan of Adam Booth, yeah. Massive fan of him.
It seems like we inevitably always end up talking about the fighter who lost first before we speak about the fighter who won. But let's do that now. David Avanesyan, where next for him? I spoke to Neil Marsh yesterday. Fight that I'd love to see and that I put to him was potentially Danny Aryalusanov or somebody around that kind of level. Neil Marsh said that it's got to be a big fight now for Avanesyan, which you can understand considering the career he's had. But yeah, surely the only way is up now for him.
Yeah, I'd love to see Avanesyan him with Sean Porter. I think them two would not lumps off each other.
Yeah,
it'd
be a really good action. Yulusanov,
yeah, I think it's a good fight for Yulusanov, but like you say, for Avanesyan, again, the Kelly fight was a risk. You lose to Kelly, you're done at world level. You lose to Yulusanov, he's done at world level again. So I would love to see him fight Sean Porter. How plausible that is, I don't know, you'd know better than me, I'm not sure.
It's kind of the issue with stuff like this is that I completely understand that way of thinking, and Neil Marsh kind of said the same thing with regards to Yulusanov versus Avanesyan, but he said that, you know, they'd actually agreed the Yulusanov fight when the Kelly fight stalled once or second time or whenever. And he said that they'd be more than happy to take that fight if there was a final eliminator tag to it and he could get a world title next. We know the kind of political landscape at 147 pounds. You mentioned Sean Porter there. I actually had this discussion with somebody on Twitter. What does Avanesyan have to gain from boxing Yulusanov? What does Sean Porter have to gain from boxing David Avanesyan? Sean Porter's looking to fight Terence Crawford. He wants to fight Keith Thurman in a rematch, Errol Spence in a rematch. So you can kind of make that argument no matter how high up you go. Yeah. But I think it's fair to say that, a big fight looms next for Mr. Avanesyan.
I hope so. I'm a fan of Avanesyan. You know, he's been around for a long time and he's done it the hard way. And he's a very, very, very good fighter.
Elsewhere on the card, and it really was a brilliant card from top to bottom. Chief support, Florian Marku against Rylan Charlton. Thoughts. I think it looked like pretty much Florian Marku in cruise control for a lot of the fight, and then he got dropped with a left hook and almost the fight got turned on its head.
Florian Marku was a good boxer. Like, I like watching him. He's got a great little style. He's fluent. He's fast. His jab was great. There's just something missing with him for me. He's just not... He doesn't. I can't see him getting anywhere near the
like
top
the
level.
Kickboxing background, so similar to Barry Jones, and we about that kind of squared on style. He throws punches from kind of. He has a bit of an awkward rhythm to him sometimes as well. That background.
There's a kid called Elliot Whale, I think, and he beat Jamie Stewart far more comprehensively than Floyd Marco in his fourth
on the
fight.
NTK show,
I'm not being funny. Rylan Charlton, right, tough fella. If he watches this, I like what he's doing. He's tough. He's strong. He can punch. He's not very good, Rob. He's not very good at all as a boxer. He can't box for toffee, to be honest. Florian Marku, like, he's getting dropped by him. He's not beating Jamie Stewart in good fashion. And I remember when Florian Marku beat Muma from lives 5 minutes from me. I was really impressed by him, but these last two fights, like, he's not going to the very top. You know what I mean? And a lot of people said, like, Josh Kelly, Josh Kelly's this and that. Florian Marku's a world beater. Josh Kelly would play with Florian Marku, you know? I sound negative today, but these are just the facts of it. Florian Marku was good, like, he's good. full of talent, great athlete. You know, I'm sure he's a tough man and all the rest of it, but he's not. I don't think he's going. He's not going to the top. There's something missing with him. I don't know what it is. Maybe experience again, like you say. I was going to say that.
Potentially it's experience with him. But, you know, we don't know. Experience and what have you is not necessarily going to change him completely as a fighter. The fact that he's come from that kickboxing background means that he's inevitably going to be behind you, Josh Kelly's and your other amateur-style fighters or he's seasoned
good.
Amateurs.
He's good, isn't he? He's good. I like to watch him. He's good.
He's exciting. I don't think he'll be in many bad fights.
Yeah, he's just... around British title level again, I think that's his ceiling again. I just think he's just that's just where he is. We can't all be world champions. I say this all the time to the boys I train. We can't all be world champions and superstars, you know. Be great if we could, but we haven't got them kind of capabilities that other people have got. And I say we, meaning me and myself, you know. I don't sit here saying that I was a great fighter better than all these I'm talking about, but when people ask me an opinion or something, it's just the truth. And Florian Mark, who's just, he's not going to be top level. And Charlton, the Laws rematch, maybe. There's loads of fights out there for Ryan Charlton.
I think he needs to go down to 140.
Yeah, he's no tough more 140. He's tough in his game. He can hit a bit, but you know, but everyone knows who he is now. Everyone knows who he is. Everyone likes to watch him. I enjoy watching the last two fights. He's had, he tried with Marco and he did a good job on Joe Laws. But like you say, get down to 140. You know, box a bit. And see what happens.
Florian Marku versus Luther Clay, a fight that's been talked about. We've had Mr. Siesta here today.
Luther Clay beats him.
Yeah.
Comfortably, I think. What do you think?
I would go with Luther Clay based on what we've seen in the last two fights from Florian Marku. Luther Clay, obviously, we've not seen him since Chris Congo. You never know how a fighter's going to respond to their first defeat. But
I don't think Marku's ready for them.
Not his first defeat. He actually got beaten, albeit robbed in a dodgy decision.
He's not ready for them final fights, Florian Marku.
I think he needs some development.
He's two or three fights away from a Luther Clay. Mm. Luther Clay might lose Chris Congo. Chris Congo might go on to be world class for all we know. So I don't think he's ready for a Luther Clay. I think he needs to stay around the level he's at now for two or three fights. I think he can get to the British level. Whether they can fight, I don't think he can fight for a British title, but
I know what you mean.
I think that's where he'll get to. If you rush him into a Luther Clay fight, I think you'll get him beat.
Another very good stoppage in that fight from Team Charlton. The reason why I think it's good to highlight these things is we're more than happy to highlight when it's a bad stoppage or a corner leaves a fighter in there for too long. But another trainer who really saved his fighter for another day, and albeit Rylan Charlton, even up to that point, it took some serious stick. Yeah.
Well, dropping Marku, that meant he stayed in there for a bit
probably
longer.
Probably kept him in there a bit longer, didn't it? Yeah.
Because the first 5 rounds, Marku was looking great, and I'm thinking, you know when Charlton beat Joe Laws, right? It's like when you win a Class 6 at Southall. I don't know if you know your horse racing. You win like a low-graded race, but you win it in great fashion. Everyone thinks you're going to be a superstar horse. You're going to go to group and graded events. But then you go from that Class 6 and you end up in a listed race or a Class B handicap, a good handicap. Well, Florian Marku is your Class B handicapper. And Charlton moved up and he realised he weren't at that level. You know, you can't go from there to there. You know, Marku was a good fighter and Charlton just got found out. He's an experience as well. Mad, really. Chief support. It wasn't a chief support.
I was going to say that.
Inexperienced men doing 10-rounders, a lot of pressure. So I take me out to both of them, you know.
Complacency from Marku
getting
dropped?
Caught with a shot, 100%. But it's still a worry, though. It is still a worry, definite worry. I want to see Marku do well because he's a good character. I enjoy him as a character because he's definitely a character. He's got a really nice style. He's got a lot of ability. But don't rush him to a Clay or anywhere near that because I think we'll get him beat.
It's going to be kind of difficult with him because he's got a very fan-pleasing style. He's got a huge following from Albania. I don't know if you've ever been to one of his fights where he's been boxing, but they really do come and make an awful lot of noise.
Yeah.
So it's going to be difficult because you have to kind of manage people wanting, and this is something that people wanting to see him and him being potentially not at the level that people are going to expect to see him box to get on these shows. So it's going to be interesting, I think, for Florian Marku. Sam Jones immediately said that he wanted to be out next and he wanted to fight pretty much anybody and everybody who was around. But yeah, potentially slow down a little bit with him. But I think it's going to be difficult when you've got somebody like Marku who, I mean, he looks like he could get into a fight walking down the street. I mean, he looks like he really does love... Yeah.
Well, I see when they say, oh, we'll fight Conor Benn next or we'll fight Josh Kelly. It's like, well, he's trying to cash him out because he ain't going to beat them in a million years.
Where does this leave Conor Benn in the division domestically? I know by all accounts.
He's got to beat Vargas.
That's a good point.
Will he beat Vargas? I hope so. I mean, I genuinely hope so. The same way that I hoped Marco and Charlotte, I didn't really want either of them to win. It was like, whoever wins, wins. I don't know either of them. I wish them only the best. With Kelly and Avanesian, because I told the whole world that Avanesian would win, I kind of need Avanesian to win. But I still wanted Josh to win, really.
Mm.
I like Josh.
You'd have been happy to be proven.
Yeah, I would have been happy for Josh to win. The same with Conor Benn, I hope he wins. But Vargas is not, it's not a foregone conclusion at all. Because Formella, as tough as he was, Vargas is a few levels above that fella for definite. So it's interesting.
There's talk, I mean, of how much substance there is to it. But there's talk of like Conor Benn and Amir Khan, and which is not really something that you would have ever expected. Like, that is really two generations meeting. I'm not really too sure about that one.
No, I hope not. I wouldn't even like to see it, to be honest.
Mm.
Conor Benn beats Vargas, I think he goes to the top of the pile. Khan and Brook, I don't really see him as part of that mix, really.
The only fight
they're semi-retired.
Yeah, the only fight that I really want to see or really would watch between those guys is each other.
Yeah.
And I'd still watch it, and so would all of you who are watching us and saying that you wouldn't. Moving on, another fighter that you know very well, Robbie Davis Jr., come up short against. And again, this kind of leans towards the matchmaking in a sense of it was a good fight, very competitive throughout. It wasn't a walkover job by any stretch of the imagination, but Robbie Davis coming up short against Gabriel Valenzuela of Guadalajara. Yeah, the Mexicans coming over and not taking any prisoners recently.
Yeah, I love Robbie. Lovely bloke. Got a lot of time for him. Great with Danny at the gym. Danny's down at the gym now. He just didn't look right, to be honest. I know the fella that he boxed, tough Mexican, good. He was good. He could punch clearly. But I just felt like Robert is best. He's beating him. You know, he just looked flat. The third round in the corner with Dom, something was going off. That was one of the things I've seen. Didn't understand what was going off, and then the whole southpaw orthodox thing with Dom later in the fight. The whole fight was just a weird thing to watch, really. I thought the Mexican won by a couple of rounds. I thought 96-95 was a bit generous to Rob, but I don't know. It was really weird watching. I didn't really know what to make of it, to be honest. It was odd. The whole thing was odd. You know, you can make loads of assumptions. Rob's overtrained. He's took his eye off the ball, late opponent, all the rest of it. I don't know, but it was an odd one.
You mentioned the southpaw orthodox kind of conundrum that was going on like in front of our eyes, really, and you could hear it even in between rounds where Dom would call out, Dominic Ingle, of course, trainer of Robbie Davis Jr., would call out for him to switch southpaw, stay southpaw. And Davis never really looked too comfortable with it. Now, obviously, I'm not going to profess to know as much about training or coaching fighters as Dominic Ingle, but from your experience and expertise, why do you think that could have been a suggestion? Because it seemed to me, from my admittedly uneducated vantage point, that it was putting him in the line of fire to that right hand. And pretty quickly after he changed southpaw, he was getting tagged down the pipe an awful lot. I can't quite work out what the plan for that was.
Well, as an orthodox fighter, if I'm fighting the southpaw, the straight right hand, and obviously the right hand was what was landing. So the only thing I said, when someone said to me after the fight, what do you think about the Robbie Davis situation with the southpaw? I said, well, if I'm getting with the right hand a lot as a southpaw, I'm going to go back orthodox. I'm going to stay orthodox because that right hand, there's a home for it every time if you're in southpaw. But I just said, but Dom's a great coach. So Dom's seen something. Like that. Rob's got to listen to what Dom says, but I mean, it's easy to say now, you know. Maybe Dom saw something that we didn't see, obviously. But
I don't think I've ever seen it in the fight. A fighter, not arguing, they weren't arguing with each other, but that kind of difference of opinion in the middle of, and it is such a. I've kind of likened it to. Because it's also worth pointing out that Robbie Davis Jr. was fairly new to the Ingle gym. He wouldn't have boxed southpaw an awful lot in his career to this point. You know, you wouldn't have necessarily thought. Sort of likened it to, you know, Lionel Messi taking a penalty with his right foot or something like that. You know, at a time where he couldn't really afford a loss, it felt like he was doing something unnatural. And we saw him on several instances say to Dom, I want to go orthodox. And Dom insisted him staying there. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah,
that surely can't be good for the synergy of trainer fighter in the corner.
It was odd, you know, and You have to speak to Rob. He's the only one that can say, that will be able to tell you. But I don't know, the third round in the corner, that was the most odd. Wasn't sure what he was saying. I think Rob's had I think he's had an off night, to be honest. I don't think he was feeling it. Maybe he's been in the gym too long. I know he's been in the gym a long time. Maybe he's feeling that. Maybe, I don't know. It'd be interesting what his next move is. Hopefully he boxes again. He comes back and does well. I really like Rob, so I'm hopeful.
I spoke to Neil Marsh yesterday, who obviously is the manager of David Avanesyan as well as Robbie Davis Jr. And he said that he'd spoken to Dominic as well as Robbie, and they'd kind of discussed it, and Dominic had told him what his thoughts were, and he'd accepted that as you know, the opinion and the expertise of a world-class coach, like, yeah, as Dominic Ingall is and has proved himself to be over a period of time. But he also said that he felt Robbie Davis Jr. will be back in the ring soon. Apparently, Robbie's asked him about getting back in the ring as soon as possible, which is good. And also worth pointing out that he wasn't trounced. I felt like he lost the fight. I felt like Valenzuela was a comfortable winner in a fairly close fight, but still a very worthy winner. It's kind of interesting to see where Robbie Davis goes from here now.
Well, I'm not sure how good Valenzuela is. He could, you know, we've never seen him move anyone else over here, have we? So we're not sure how good he is. He could end up proving that he's a really good fighter, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I just hope Rob comes back and wins some fights, really. Can't say any more than that. I like him, so I just wanted to see him do well. So time will tell.
Valenzuela is a part of, well, connected to the No Boxing, No Life, Eddie Reynoso, Canelo team, and is from Guadalajara. So everybody who's got those connections is probably going to be some cop. Elsewhere on the card, we're going to go for the fights that went the distance first. So Jordan Gill versus Cesar Juarez. Really entertaining fight. And also, I thought a very impressive performance overall from Jordan Gill.
Yeah, I thought it was great. The opponent was tough and game. He was a good fighter, the opponent.
Yeah, Juarez is a good fighter. He's mixed it at a good level.
Yeah, I thought Jordan did really well. Thought he did what he had to do. You know, he boxed really well. Again, is he going to be world class? I don't think he is. He hasn't got the physical strength or the power. That's not the question you asked, but that's the answer I'm going to tell you. I just don't. When you got these top class Mexicans and Filipinos and Japanese fellas at these lower weights, you've got to be a really special man to be beating them. You've got to have some real power, you know. Look at the fellas who shot Juarez, you know, Dogbo, and there's a few other names on there. They've got world class power and strength. If you want to be a world champion at these weights, you've got to really have either physical strength or some real big punching power, preferably both, you know. But Jordan Gill, for me, I love watching because he's skillful, a fighter you'll struggle to see. He's great. There's not many like him about at the minute because he's technically outstanding. But again, you've got to have a bit of strength and power to go with it if you want to get to the very, very top.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that with regards to we've not seen the power from him yet. Well, one thing that we have seen in the past in the Enrique Tinoco fight is him kind of, you know, we heard the stories of him being ill going into the fight, but you have to take it for what you see on the night. And, you know, he got stopped in quite devastating, dramatic fashion. For him to hold it together, I think it was the end of the fourth round, Gil got kind of trapped in the corner and Juarez unloaded with, I think, four or five punches that got through. And I kind of had a thought then that, you know, this is where we learn about Jordan Gill. Did he learn from the Enrique Tinoco fight? You know, you can put, as much as it may sound harsh to say, put the health things to one side for a minute and just think about the night. And the demons that he must have felt on the back of that. And those thoughts would have gone through his head during the fight when Juarez was really putting the pressure on him. And I felt like he did very, very well. I think he showed a very good temperament. And I think it's a box that needed to be ticked on the back of that Tinoco performance and could set him up for, look, we don't know what level he's going to end up at. But I think it's quite safe to say that had he lost that fight to Juarez, then it would have been very much, you know, domestic level at best. Which, as you've mentioned previously, there's nothing wrong with domestic level. Yeah. It's difficult enough to box at that stage. But he may require just that little bit more X factor, particularly, you know, at featherweight, super featherweight. Those guys are kind of coming through now. They're punching harder. Mm. It's becoming more of a, you know, the stars of those divisions are guys who are getting people out of there. If Jordan Gill has that or possesses that, we've not seen it yet. But what we have seen is his ability, you know, to respond and react to the first loss of his career, which would have hurt him an immense amount. And he's now back on the horse. So credit to Jordan Gill, I think.
Yeah, I thought he's good. He's a very smart man, Jordan. He's a really nice man. He's smart. He's got great technical ability. You know, he's a good amateur. He's came through the Ingle gym. He's working with Dave now. They seem to be getting on great. So he's a really, really, really good fighter. But again, to get to the top level at super feather, you know, super, all around them ways, you want to beat these Mexicans in that, you're going to have to crack really hard, really physically strong. You have to do that. You have to be able to crack and physically go for 12 rounds because these guys will. So, you know, I look more look at boxing now, the more I realise you want to get to the top level, the physical strength required, the punching power required. You're going to be knocking everyone out, but you've got to have the respect at least, you know. And Jordan got that. I'm not sure, but he'll continue to be in good fights, and I continue to enjoy watching him.
There's also kind of being able to stand up to those shots as well, yeah. Which is an equally important part. Now, last but by no means least was the debut of another heavyweight, Johnny Fisher. Seems to me like the nicest man in the world, but we'll talk about that afterwards. What did you make of his performance?
I love Johnny Fisher. Yeah, I love him. He's a really nice fella, yeah. When I boxed Lucas Brown, he was the main sparring partner. And I don't think he'd had an amateur bout for about 8 or 9 years at this point. He just randomly came down. Darren said, we've got some fella here, a big kid, plays a bit of rugby. I said, well, what are we sparring him for? So just bring him down and said, we did 6 rounds. He struggled the first time. He did all right. Like, he got through 6. And I thought, well, he's not bad at all, really, because I was fit at the time. And then the last bar, the Brown camp, we did 12. Did 2 with him and 2 with another fella. 2 in, 2 out for 12. And I thought, good, this fella, he's strong as a bull. He's really at Romford Bull, isn't he? Strong as a bull. And then he went off with Sam Jones, got hold of him, took him with Joe Joyce. And so I watched him the other day. He's very strong, he's very fit. More than anything like that, he works hard and he's got a brain. Very, very smart man he is. So I think he'll get there. Like, I watched him Saturday. He's a raw novice. For an amateur, he's a raw novice for an amateur. But he'll get there. I think it's going to take 6 or 7 years before you see him British title level. That's how long it's going to take. But
do you get that long nowadays?
Yeah, well, he's going to need that long, to be honest. Sam Jones, yeah. I like Sam. Me and Sam are all right. He annoys me sometimes, but he's all right. He'll do a good job with him. He knows what it's going to take for Johnny. He's going to take him everywhere. He's going to go with Joe. He's going to go everywhere all over the world with Joe, sparring all the rest of it. That's what he needs. He's miles off the finished article. You know, you watched him the other day. The fight with Matt Gordon, like, it wasn't a great level of boxing, but he's got the attributes. He's strong, he's fit, he's quick, he's a great athlete. He just needs to be taught how to box, you know? He's got to spar the best, and he's got to be coached, not trained. He's got to be coached how to box properly, someone that'll suit how he is, his style, the way he goes about things. And then he's got to be knocking over dumplings for the next 2 or 3 years while he does it, you know? But like you say, it is difficult because he's going to be on Sky. You know how many Matt Gordons you're going to get before everyone starts moaning at you?
And particularly under the current environment and climate.
Yeah, of course, but that's Sam's job to then take him all over Europe, take him all over the place, get him fighting, knocking dumplings over.
You've got a couple of heavyweights who can box him?
Well, to be honest, I've got Danny Whittaker and Josh Sandland, and if he boxes them both tomorrow, I think my boys will beat him because they've had 10 pro fights between them. They've got an amateur background. They're good fighters, you know what I mean? And I think Johnny, in 5 or 6 years' time, he'd be a British champion. But right now, he's not. That's why it's going to take 5 or 6 years. I love the kid, mate. I think he's an absolute lovely fella. Mm. But it's going to take 5 or 6 years. He's got the physical attributes and the brain and the want to get there. But right now, it's baby steps. And it's proper baby steps. Because he's had 10 amateur fights. And a minute and a half with Matt Gordon. That's not enough to be these guys in a competitive environment. When you watch on the TV, the nerves and everything involved. I had 10 pro amateur fights at 20. And I was crap. I was fucking terrible. And I've been on the GB squad, not won a national amateur title. And I was still crap because I had no experience. Do you know what I mean? He's not half as good as what I had behind me. Do you know what I mean? So, buddy will get there. And I love you, Johnny, if you're watching. I'll back him all the way, me, 100% of the way. I hope everyone else. I just hope they're all patient with him, and I know Sam will do a good job with him. Because like I said with Sam Jones, don't like you all the time, but I like you some of the time. He'll do a good job with him. So yeah, I look forward to it.
And also worth pointing out that he's going to be joined. Picked that up. Worth pointing out that he's going to be joined with another young heavyweight. Apparently, Daniel Dubois is joining the gym with Mark Tibbs. A little bit out of left field there, I think. Not necessarily the fact that Daniel's changed trainers. I think on the back of the Joyce fight and performance, I don't think that's a tremendous shock to everybody. But didn't necessarily immediately think of Mark Tibbs, but I think a good fit there. He did some good work with Dillian White.
Yeah, did great with Dillian. Yeah, did great. He, I'm a Daniel Dubois fan. I have been for a long time. You know, and when he started coming out of his shell a bit more, I've loved him lately. The Joyce face, I thought it was so childish. I thought that was brilliant. I was watching it laughing my head. I thought, you're so childish. But me and you get on really well. But yeah, great for Johnny being around Daniel, you know, because Daniel, technically, the basics, Daniel Dubois got off to a T, you know, the jab, the straight 1-2, all the rest of it. So great for Johnny. And great for Mark as well, for them, obviously, Dillian and him not working together. You know, he's probably thinking, oh, where's my next, when I've lost a pay-per-view superstar, Dylan White, really, isn't he? If we're going to be speaking the facts of it. And I bet he's thinking, oh, no, what's going to come next? Daniel Dubois.
Canelo, Billy Joe Saunders as well.
Oh, bloody hell, yeah. He's not doing too bad,
yeah,
he's
probably doing all right.
No, but...
I know what you mean, though. Yeah, I obviously know what you mean.
It's brilliant to have Daniel Dubois coming to the stable, you know, because he's going to be here for the next 10 years. Amazing. When Dylan White left him, he must have been thinking, oh, no, I've lost one of the best heavyweights on the planet. Doesn't matter. 18 months later, in comes another one. Great news.
A lot of work needed doing with Daniel?
Loads of work, but... Again, it's like with Johnny, yeah. You got a shell. Basically, you got a shell. Mark can do whatever he wants with him because he's such a great athlete. He'll learn quick because he's a very smart fella, and he wants to learn. But with Daniel, obviously, you got a lot more meat on the bones because he's been a good amateur, been a good pro, really. So, I think they'll do great. I think Daniel will be heavyweight champion in the world one day, definitely.
Okay, elsewhere across the pond, it was also another packed night of boxing. We're going to start with arguably the fight of the night and arguably the knockout of the year so far. Oscar Valdez with a stunning knockout of Miguel Burchell. Not a lot of people gave him much of a chance going into that, and it was an absolute clinic from the opening bell. I think there was maybe a couple of rounds. I think the sixth round, Burchell had some good pressure, but other than that, it was a brilliant performance from Oscar Valdez.
Yeah, it was on Free Sports last night, I think. Because my old man rung me at daft o'clock, saying, David, have you watched this? I said, what are you talking about? He said, have you watched it? I said, yeah. He went, bloody brilliant, this fella. So he must be good.
Your dad doesn't give out cheap compliments.
If my old man's saying someone's good, he's good. So yeah, great win for him. And I don't think we'll see a better knockout all year. Amazing, yeah.
Maybe fight went on a little bit too long.
Well, it's easy to say that now with the ending, but
it's a difficult one.
They go
on
longer
it?
In America, don't they? They do seem to go on a bit longer.
Well,
America.
I mean, one could argue Josh Warrington was allowed to go on a little bit longer
that
than he should
horrific.
Have against Mauricio.
Should have had me in last week because I'd have had.
Well, we can talk about that now. Let's talk
horrific.
About that now.
It was horrific.
Before we come on to the Mexican super featherweight, let's talk about Josh Warrington.
It was
last
horrific.
Week. We spoke about these Mexicans coming over and having a good go, and Mauricio Lara certainly did that last week.
It was horrific, though. He should have been stopped in the fourth round. He was out, gone. And when he came out for the... If I'm in Josh Warrington's corner, right, I'm pulling him there. The towel's going in the corner, he's being pulled out. Walking out for the start of the fifth round, his legs have gone completely. He's coming out, he's being pulled out. It was the referee should have stopped it. All the way around, it's being stopped before the count, isn't it? Mental. And that's without going about Kiko Martinez, who there's no way he didn't win 6 rounds out of 12. Impossible. He won 6. After 8 rounds, I think I had it 6-2 or 7-1. I think that's what I had it. Either 6-2 or 7-1. And Zelf won the last 4. So for me, it was either 8-4 or 7-5 to Kiko. And I don't think I could give him less than 7. Mental scorecards. And the referee, I think it was Howard, who lives about 10 minutes from me, but I'm sorry, Howard. It was poor refereeing, should have stopped the fight. And it takes some getting over for Josh, that fight, because unbelievably brave and tough man that he is, but you don't need many of them. You don't need any of them. That's going to take so much out of him. But I hope he comes back, because that effort that he put in there was unbelievable.
I mean, it really was.
How he got to the eighth round?
I think so. It was the eighth round.
Seventh and eighth. How he got through the fifth. How he got up from the fourth. Incredible.
Strange one as well, because admittedly not, you know, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, I guess, but he's not like he'd already vacated his title. It wasn't like he would have had to give up a title there and then on the spot to Mauricio Lara. Yeah, it seemed to me like that fight should have been stopped. As you say, I think if the towel come in during the fourth round, then nobody could have had any complaints. And no. I do completely agree with you. I think if the shoe was on the other foot, Mauricio Lara would have definitely been stopped. I wonder what George Groves was thinking about Howard Foster's refereeing there. Yeah.
Well, Howard Foster made George Groves the Wembley rematch. So I don't think
he can't be too upset, really.
I wouldn't be too upset about it. But the fight should have been stopped. It was horrific. Not as bad as a Kiko Martinez scorecard.
Mm. It's worth pointing out that.
But horrific nonetheless.
I think obviously last week there was a huge uproar over the scoring and the refereeing. And I think this past weekend, albeit apart from some rather naughty rabbit punching from Robbie Davis Jr., I think the officiating and the scorecards, the fact that Valenzuela got the card, I didn't have much faith in him getting the decision. I felt like the fight was close enough that it wouldn't have surprised me if Robbie Davis got the decision. He didn't. I think the right man won on the night, so maybe
good.
The board
needs to keep the pressure
all.
On.
Yeah.
The board needs to be putting the pressure on the officials.
I read the interview that Robert Smith, General Secretary of the British Boxing Board of Control, did in Boxing News, and it was very much, I'm happy with what we do, I'm happy with this, I'm happy with that, but, the week after, it seems as though potentially something has kind of changed in that period of time. But yeah, I mean, as you say there, keeping the pressure on and not standing for the poor scoring. I think Eddie was great after the fight last week with the Martinez-Barrett fight. And also worth pointing out that I actually felt quite sorry for Zelfa Barrett. He was stood there and not as sorry as I felt for Kiko Martinez, admittedly. But Zelfa was kind of stood there and it's not really his fault, but what's he supposed to say? But at the end of the day, the judging needs to change because this has been going on for a long time now in British boxing. Mm. And Eddie hit the nail on the head. You already deter people, world-class fighters, from coming over to the UK because they don't feel like they're going to get a fair shake. Mm. Now, it's not a problem that we have exclusively here, but it's certainly something that needs addressing. And by the looks of things, touch wood, hopefully it's the same moving forward, but it looked like on Saturday night that there was no real complaints with regards to the judging or officiating.
No, it was better, but there weren't really any choices for anyone to make, really, were there? Apart from the Robbie Davis fight. There wasn't anything to really worry about, I didn't think. But we've got to keep the pressure on the board. We have to just... When things like the Kiko fight, the Ritz and Vasquez, we've got to make our voices heard, because it's disgusting, Imagine if Zelf went over to Spain and the same happened in reverse. We'd be going absolutely mental, wouldn't we? We'd be saying, oh, I'm never going to Spain again. Well, like you say, it's not Zelf's fault. Zelf fought well. The last four rounds, he won easy, and I feel like he improved throughout the fight, I think with Zelf, a lot of it is self-confidence, I think he's got to back himself more. Very, very talented. But I think he put himself in a shell because Kiko came out so strong. And Kiko is unbelievable. He's a great fighter experience. I think he put himself in a shell. The last four rounds, I think Zelf thought, but yeah, I can push this fella back. What's the point of being the biggest super feather in the world if you're not going to use your strength? I thought it was great the last four rounds. So yeah, it's not Zelf's fault at all. And that's the biggest shame of it, because every fight he has now, the next 12, 18 months is going to be, remember when he was Kiko Martinez? He didn't win that one. That's what people will say. So it's a shame for him as well.
Moving back over to Berchelt versus Valdez, a massive win for Oscar Valdez in a really good division. Super featherweight shaping up really nicely. Shakur Stevenson talking about that fight next. I really like that fight. I really like the look of Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah, he looks the real deal, don't he? I don't know, though. Experience again. You can be a great amateur. I'm not saying he's not done well as a pro, because he has. He's not done anything wrong, at least. But I think I'd pick Valdez. You got to go for the proven at all times. It's like horse racing. Always go for the proven. Because until someone's gone through, done them 12-hour rounds with a real world-class operator, you never know. So I'm picking Valdez because he's definitely the best fighter that Shakur Stevenson's boxed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In my opinion.
Absolutely. And you talk about the experience. I mean, Oscar Valdez really has kind of gone and done it all now. I mean, yeah. I think one of the most impressive parts of his performance was the fact that we've seen him, in the past, kind of go to war in every single fight. I mean, he's been dropped. He's got dropped by Adam Lopez. He got dropped by Genesis Savanya. Scott Quigg and him had that brilliant fight where Quigg was, I think, 3 or 4 pounds over. And that took, it does take a lot of miles, puts a lot of miles on the clock. And going into the fight, I kind of looked at Valdez as this seek and destroy, load up Mexican fighter and thinking, is that necessarily going to be what works against Burchard? But I think the game plan that was cooked up between him and Eddie Reynoso was fantastic. And it's one thing cooking up the game plan, but it's another thing going out there and executing it. And I thought he was exceptional. It was such an impressive performance.
He's just a real experience. Experience is just the key in boxing. Look at all the fights we talked about just today. Avanesi and Kelly, you know. The experience, you know, Marco over Charlton, even though it's kickboxing experience, in-ring experience over Charlton, experience is so, so important, you know. And with that, with experience, you got a confidence. During the latter stage of my career, because I started to have had a few fights behind me, things started to slow down. In my career, I couldn't hear the crowd. During the end, I could hear everything, you know. So Valdez, yeah, he's only going to get better, I believe. And I hope the Stevenson fight does happen, and I hope he beats him. He was great the other day, and just a proper good fighter, isn't he?
Very, very good fighter. And, you know, he's made no secret. The fact that he kind of, you know, sought out the Burchelt fight and, you know, went there, and he really had a point to prove, but it kind of shows what type of personality he is. He's come out already and said that he's willing to box Shakur Stevenson. So we hope that that's a fight that can be made. Now, elsewhere across the pond was the Showtime boxing card. Just want to talk to you about Dominic Brazil and Otto Wallin, your old division, the heavyweight division. Now, the last time I saw Otto Wallin in the ring, admittedly he's boxed since, was against Tyson Fury in that bloody night in Las Vegas. Not the best fight in the world. It wasn't quite Foreman Lyle, but a resounding win for Otto Wallin at this stage of his career.
Well, Wallin's an handful, isn't he? He's gonna give everyone an hard night. Brazil's not what he was. Brazil at one point was dangerous, big, strong, tough, dangerous man. He's not the same man anymore. The Joshua fight, the Wilder knockout, they've took a bit out of him, I think. But Wallin, he's gonna be an handful, isn't he, for everyone. I don't think he's gonna get any massive fights, but beat Brazil. Who will he fight next? I'm not sure, but whoever he fights, you'll have an hard night with him. Whatever happens, whether he beats him or not, he's gonna give them all a bit of trouble. So he's good to have in the mix. He's not exciting, is he? And I think that's gonna be his downfall.
I think the thing for him is that he'll always be able to be sold on that night against Tyson Fury. Yeah, you can sell Otto Wallin based on that performance. I mean, it's not forget, you know, he gave a really good account of himself. He was there that night. He cut Fury with a punch. He hurt Fury in the last round with a good left hand. So you'll always be able to kind of push him and market him based on that. And I think that will lead to opportunities for him down the line. Adrian Broner. The problem. The return of the problem. Now, I know that you're not necessarily the biggest fan of Adrian Broner. Did you watch the fight?
Didn't watch the fight. I don't stay up past certain hours now. I can't do it anymore. But Adrian Broner, when he boxed Gavin Reese, I thought he was the second coming. Great fighter, four-weight world champion, I think he is, or four-time.
He is, yeah. I think of the people to become to win world titles at 130, 135, 140, or 147, I think it's De La Hoya, Mayweather, Pacquiao, and Adrian Broner.
Great, but he is a good fighter. He's not as good as he once was. But what weight was the fight on Saturday?
147.
He's not a welterweight. Maybe he's a welterweight. Maybe he can't do less than that now. Maybe that's the case. But super feather and lightweight, he was a beast because he was so much bigger than everyone else. It's like Teofimo Lopez now. Beat Lomachenko. Yeah, Teofimo Lopez is a great fighter, but being absolutely ridiculously big at the weight than half help as well. That's the same with Broner. Broner at welterweight is just a good fighter. It's just a good fighter.
I'm not sure he is based on Saturday night, I have to say. I think the time out of the ring has not necessarily been kind to Mr. Broner. I have to say, I love him. Like I can't help it. It's an addiction, a terrible affliction that I have. It means I'll always tune in to watch an Adrian Broner fight. It's ingrained in me, and I know I really, really shouldn't. It's kind of like being like cheating on a diet or something like that. But I think he's way, way past it now. Yeah. I mean, he was outlanded. Whatever you think of CompuBox numbers and punch stats, he was outlanded. We never outlanded his opponent, Santiago, in any of the 12 rounds. The scorecards were absolutely outrageously wide in his favour. And it's difficult to see where he goes, even if it, you know, he's talking about he can get down to 140. Can he do that safely? If he can, you know, the fight's down at 140. You're talking about the Regis Progre fight's been mentioned. Regis Progre at this stage of his career is probably not what Adrian Broner needs, in my opinion. So it's really interesting. I say really interesting. I'm not sure it is.
No.
But seeing where Adrian Broner goes next will be... Will be interesting, but
it'll go where the most money is.
Yeah,
because the fighter is often the first to know when there's not much left. At welterweight, like you say, his experience is a good fighter. He used to be an exceptional pound for pound on the pound for pound list, didn't he? At super feather and lightweight, he's just a good fighter now. He'll get beat by anyone that's world class. And on Saturday night, I'm not sure the fella who boxed was world class, to be honest. And as you say, he probably thought he still got beat. So there's not much left. There's a big name and a big mouth left. That'll earn him a lot of money, and I think he'll go where the money is, whether that's Progre or someone put welter. He'll get beat, but he'll go where the money is.
Seems like for somebody like Adrian Broner, I mean, it's worth pointing out that he is very tough as well. I mean, that night with Marcus Maidana, and obviously the fights he's had since then, he's been in good fights. He'll fight anybody, Adrian Broner. He can't really complain again.
I'm not sure the toughness is great news at this point.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that he's at the stage of his career now where he's only going to retire if he gets chinned and if he gets put flat on his back. And I'm not... I think... He's probably defensive. He's no Floyd Mayweather, despite his best impressions and his best intentions. But he's defensively cute enough and naturally tough enough where we could start seeing him. I mean, if he was against a Devin Avanesian, for example, he would have got beat up on Saturday night really, really badly. And he's tough enough and proud enough to take it.
He's 12 rounds out, wasn't he? He's in it for the money, isn't he? So he'll keep going. He'll keep going. He'll keep going. But to be honest, as I sit here now, I just don't care enough. To be honest, I love British boxing. I watch British boxing. You know, when one of the British fighters goes to America, I watch the American boxing. But when it's just American fighters fighting at night, I'm not at 5 a.m. I was just zero interest in it. To be honest, just don't care.
Well, what about Mexican boxing? Because I want to talk to you about Canelo now. You're not a big fan of Canelo, are you? You don't like Canelo?
Well, I'm not a fan.
Because he failed a drugs test.
This is not Canelo. This is not about Canelo, but I'm not a big fan of fighters that fail drug tests, to be honest. Apart from the 90s ones.
In the 80s and 90s, you can't really count. In my opinion, look, I'm as disgusted by drugs cheats as anybody, but I'm not stupid. You know, it is prevalent across the sport. You've boxed how many people who have failed drugs tests?
Yeah,
and they're just the ones who have been caught. You know, and they're not people who are having to cheat to make weight and things like that, you know. But anyway, Canelo Alvarez versus Avni Yildirim. I've said it, I sat here with...
It's a bad fight, isn't it?
I cannot see how David Avanesian, he'd have a better chance against Canelo, ironically, even at 168. I cannot see how Avni Yildirim wins that fight. Do you think that would be a bigger shock than Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson?
Yeah, bigger.
I think so as well.
Yeah. Yildirim was knocked out by Chris Eubank in two rounds.
I think his last fight was a couple of years ago. It's Anthony Durrell.
Yildirim's a good fighter. City is a good fighter. He's like European level, let's say, which is a fucking chuffing great level. Amazing level to get to. I only wish I could have won a European title or been around that level. But when you're European level and you're going up against a pound for pound number one, there's a big gap there, so I don't envisage a very good night for Mr. Yildirim. I think he'll go for a 5, 6 rounds, 7 rounds, but I don't think it'll be a very pleasant evening for him.
I think if it goes 4, 5, 6, 7 rounds, I think it goes 4, 5, 6, 7 rounds because Canelo Alvarez wants it to.
I think he'll carry him for a few rounds and he'll get rid of him around halfway. I don't think it's going to be a very pleasant evening for Yildirim at all.
No, not the best fight in the world, but a mandatory has to be observed.
Busy though, nice
exactly,
and busy. He's not waited till May for it. It's good that he's got it in, and he's can't knock him for that because he's done it in Feb. He could have done this in May, I guess, and then we'd have the right to be annoyed. But what it is at the moment, isn't it? He's got to do it, and he's doing it at the right time.
That's the thing. I think my gripe with fights like this is when it's one of two fights.
Yeah.
One of two fights in a year. If it's sandwiched in between two fights, as it is with Callum Smith and Billy Joe Saunders, well, you know, we're still waiting for it to be confirmed. It's confirmed. In May, then you know, you can kind of, yeah, you have to make your peace with it. He's the number one fighter in the world. He earns enough money where he doesn't have to box every couple of months. Although if I was on 20 million a fight or whatever, maybe you would want to box every few months. But yeah, I cannot see Avni Yildirim winning any semblance of any seconds of any rounds in that fight. I really can't. I think Canelo looks good. I think he gets him out of there probably inside two or three rounds.
Yeah, I think he'll carry him. I think he'll carry him a few rounds. Take him out, around halfway. But it's good for him. It keeps him on the ball. You know, it's keeping active, keeping him busy. It only bodes well for him for me. You know, the only way this is a situation they can lose is if he picks up a cut or some kind of hand injury. So I'm happy to see him boxing as much as possible, the fighters on this kind of level that he is. It's great to see him boxing. It's good for the sport.
It certainly is. And it's also been good for the sport to have you back today on the Boxing Social Podcast, where you belong, sat across from me. Hopefully, when COVID eases up and we can get more people in here, although we don't really need to because everybody's been taking their tests and what have you, we can get me, you and Parry Jones,
yeah, we'll love that.
Hopefully, for the next episode. So we look forward to that. But from me, Rob Tebbutt, from him, Dave Allen, thanks very much for stopping by for episode 13 of the Boxing Social Podcast in association with Betfred. Be safe, and we'll see you soon.